each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
A good Monday afternoon. It is Monday, April 24th, 2023, and you are listening to Winds of Change with Mary Fiorito, joined today, as I am almost every Monday, by my co-host, Loretta Freilich, a former criminal prosecutor from the State's Attorney's Office. Loretta, welcome.
Well, thanks, Mayor.
Happy Easter. We're still
Happy
in the Easter,
Easter
season. I've been gone for a couple of weeks, listeners,
yes,
as you well know, and Loretta has been holding down the fort and has had some beautiful shows with amazing guests, and I'm very grateful but I to her, but I'm excited to be back with all of you. I've missed you all. I know you were probably wondering. At any rate, we've got a great show lined up for you today. One of the reasons I was away was because work-wise, professionally, it was just nonstop work last week with the Supreme Court weighing in on the abortion pill case. First, we had the decision from Judge Kaczmarek in the Texas District Federal Court, and then kind of a dueling decision that came out of Washington State on behalf of 17 Democratic governors. Then the Fifth Circuit weighed in, and then the Obama administration appealed to the Supreme Court, as everyone suspected they would. And sort of surprisingly, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the Obama administration and did not keep any of the safety protocols or the guardrails, that I like to call them, around abortion pill usage and dispensing, which is really kind of the key issue. It was an interesting week, and I'm going to break all of that down with you along with Loretta here in the second half of the show. But the first half of the show, we're going to deal with some other things that have been going on in terms of new statistics that have come out and new polling, which is always interesting to see, especially because, Loretta, I don't know if you've been following some of these stories, but we're starting to see some even Republicans saying Republicans need to back off the abortion issue because it's a losing issue. What's been, you know, your response to that?
Well, Mayor, I see what's happening, and I, too, am a little concerned about it, and I'm trying to figure out what I need to be concerned about. Clearly, in Dobbs, we proved nothing is impossible for God.
Right.
And, you know, even the most staunch pro-lifers, some of them were very stunned at the result of Dobbs. And I find that also unusual, because, you know, God is in control. If you don't see it,
right,
you need to take a step back, people, and find your prayer place and go to the secret place and get in touch with God, because you cannot take human life. You are not God.
Right.
And so I understand that people are concerned, but I'm kind of, I mean, what are you going to do? Put Dobbs back in? I don't get it.
Well, you can't. I mean,
right.
Roe was, I mean, and again, we've gone over this on previous shows.
Right.
But as I've kind of laid out for everyone, Justice Alito's statement in opening Dobbs that Roe was, you know, wrong from the start.
Amen.
Is absolute truth. And even, you know, very staunch pro-abortion advocates who are constitutional attorneys, including Ruth Bader Ginsburg,
right,
were worried about the very, very flimsy foundation on which Roe stood. They knew it was it was absolutely ripe and very vulnerable to being overturned. Of course they knew it.
Well, Mary, and you too are familiar with the history, how it came from Texas, it came before the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court turned it back and said, you guys, the lawyers involved, the lawyers representing Roe and the lawyers representing the state of Texas, you are not ready to argue this.
Right.
And what we know historically from having listened to the arguments, and they are available, people, if you want to go to your library and ask them to get you the audio cassettes.
Correct.
They'll be able to show you where on the computer. And back in the day before the computer was so prolific, I know I have a set of them.
Okay.
So they are out there and available to you. And you can listen to the arguments and hear what they're going to say. But
is that the OYE website?
Yes.
O-Y-E-Z. OYE. It's parents OYE. So when you hear the bailiff say OYE, 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 the Supreme Court is in session, you're all supposed to stand. That's what that comes from. But it's OYE. If you just Googled that.
Yes.
O-Y-E-Z, you should be able to find it.
And it's also on the Supreme Court's official.
Yes. On their website, of course. Yeah.
But what everybody needs to understand is that Texas went home, and the prosecutors, the AG from Texas, he did not revamp his argument. However, the Roe plaintiff petitioner, she did. That necessary.
Right.
You know, but it was
interesting.
So they came back for a second bite of the apple. They studied what the justices were looking for, and they tailored their remarks to what the justices wanted to hear. Now, I think that what has to happen now is we need to look at what the justices are saying in some of these ancillary arguments that they or findings that they are making and find out what is there that they're looking for.
Right.
And Mary, as the girl who reads Supreme Court opinions in her spare time, will tell
just
us.
Just for fun.
just for fun.
Because I like doing that sort of stuff. Yeah.
You know, why do you think they allowed the pill to be continued to be available?
Yeah, that's that is puzzling because, and again, we'll get into this in the second half of the show in depth. It's hard to tell. And both Alito and Thomas wrote very good dissents stating that the government had not shown that there would be irreparable harm to people because all that, you know, they could have done is to say that the regulations that were in existence in the United States from the year 2000 to the year 2016, before COVID and before they had taken away what I like to call the guardrails around the abortion pill, which the government agreed to for 16 years. So all of a sudden, this is going to cause a national tragedy? For 16 years, it didn't. You know, that restrict the use of the pill at 7 weeks. Currently now, it can be prescribed for 10 weeks. It required 3 in-person visits so that a woman could get an ultrasound to rule out things like uterine fibroids or ectopic pregnancies. I mean, you take one of those abortion pills, if you have an ectopic pregnancy, you could die because your ectopic pregnancy will have been missed.
But it is, Mary, remember, it's about killing the baby, so why would they care about the mother?
Right, exactly. It's astounding. So no doctor visit. They can be sent through the mail. You know, they've reduced the time from 10 weeks or 7 weeks they've increased it to 10. And, you know, as the baby begins to grow, there's more concerns for complications, you know. So now, again, we can have, you know, non-doctors sending them through the mail to women that we don't even know if they're being coerced or not. In fact, Great Britain had what they called their pills by post program during COVID. And they found that I'll have to go look up the exact number, but at least 15% of the women were being coerced into abortions that they didn't want through these medication abortions. So, you know, again, take all the regulations off of abortion pills. What could possibly go wrong?
Right.
I mean, do you think traffickers are not going to be stockpiling these?
Yeah,
for
but
their,
not
you know,
only
for their
that,
workers?
Not only that, Mary. I mean, they're already not following the law.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, co-conspirator in that is the pregnancy center that is allowing a man to bring in an underage child without, figuring out who are you? Are you her father?
Right, right.
Are you her boyfriend? Are you her trafficker?
Right.
And so there's no accountability on the part of the pregnancy centers that are doing these abortions or these abortuaries that are doing these abortions.
Right.
But, you know, something that I've noticed that I'm finding really disturbing, and I guess I don't understand why it's happening, that they would behave ethically and with integrity. But all of a sudden, have you noticed how the different justices are getting trashed in the press? And there's all these little news stories
about Clarence Thomas.
Oh my gosh.
Going on vacation with friends from 25 years ago. You know.
25 years ago. Where were you 25 years
right.
ago when you alleged that he was engaging in this misconduct, alleged misconduct, and yet they're looking at everything to find out how can we pin something on
him? How can we discredit them?
Yes.
How can we discredit every conservative justice that sits on the bench right now?
Correct.
While making
and is not in agreement with us.
Right, exactly. And you just I was just thinking about Senator Mazie Hirono during the confirmation hearings for Amy mm-hmm. Coney Barrett. Made a point of asking her, and she leased up to by saying this, I ask every candidate for Supreme Court who comes before me, have you ever been convicted or accused of a sexual assault?
Oh,
and
my God.
There's Amy Barrett saying that, no, Senator Hirono, I have not. You know, have you ever been involved in a sexual? She goes, and I ask this of every candidate. Well, when Ketanji Brown Jackson was sitting there, somehow she forgot that she asks every single Senator Hirono. Had no questions about sexual assault for Ketanji Brown Jackson. So,
but the one question Ketanji Brown Jackson couldn't answer is,
what is a woman?
What is a woman?
She doesn't
know.
Can
you believe
that? Yeah, I guess I can. So, unfortunately.
So all these women that are going to be taking these pills, all these women, they want to have unfettered abortion rights.
Right.
We don't know who we're giving it to.
Right. Exactly. Well, we're going to go to our first break. We're going to give our listeners, we're going to give you your first break. And then when we come back, we're going to be joined by the official friend of the show, Dr. Michael New, who, of course, is the human computer, as I like to call him. And he's going to talk about just briefly about a lawsuit that's using the Federal Comstock Act, which is kind of an, you know, interesting. This could be a Trivial Pursuit question for you someday, folks. And it's a case out of New Mexico, and Michael's going to unpack that for us when we return. And then second half of the show, we'll break down the abortion pill cases and what they mean. So this is Mary Fiorito. I don't even know my own last name. Mary Fiorito and Loretta Frelich sitting in, as we do most Mondays, for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change. Don't go away.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week. For adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststanschurch.org. You are listening to
Mary Fiorito
and
Loretta Frelich
on Winds of Change.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the Sacrament of Reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito along with Loretta Frelich. We are sitting in for Father Anthony here on Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750, WNDZ, and WSFI 90. Loretta, help me out here. What's the... I just completely forgot the...
88.5
FM. I'm
sorry,
listeners. We are... E.W. Chan's new radio voice in Chicago, Chicagoland, and so I am still not used to this FM and AM broadcast line anymore. So Anyway.
It is quite an alphabet salad.
It is. And to say it all at the same time. Anyway, you're listening to us, and that's great. So we are pleased to be joined again by our official friend of the show, Dr. Michael New, who is a professor at Catholic University of America. He is an expert on all things statistics, which is why he has earned the nickname from me, the human computer. Dr. New, are you there?
Yes.
Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
Oh, you were in Chicago recently, a couple weeks ago. I was unfortunately unable to see you, but was that your first time here visiting?
No, I come to Chicago pretty frequently. That my PhD is in political science, and every year in Chicago, the Midwest Political Science Association hosts an annual meeting. So it's in Chicago. It's at the Palmer House Hilton. Because of the pandemic, I've not gone the past few years, so this is my first since 2019. But, yeah, usually around mid to late April, I find myself in Chicago.
Well, we'll have to, you know, keep that in mind for next year when you come, because then we could come, you could come to the studio at Winds of Change, and we could tape you live in the studio. That would be a great thing, I think, for you to visit and see the historic monstrance that's here. And I know that you were kind of doing a live Facebook feed with your friend Wayne at outside St. Mary of the Angels.
It was actually Warner, but yeah.
Warner, sorry, not Wayne, sorry. Warner, and in fact, a wedding that Warner attended is actually the daughter of two people I was, you know, when I was in my 20s, were in my friend group, and then, you know, they met at this pro-life thing that I was helping to coordinate and got married, and so there was their daughter getting married. I couldn't believe it. I thought, oh my goodness, I know that name. So at any rate, it looked like it was a beautiful day for a wedding, but the church where you were for that wedding, Michael, is literally, Loretta was at St. Mary of the Angels, so it's just up the road from, you could walk to St. Stan's, where we tape, where the radio studio is. So next time we'll have to arrange that so that, and it's not far from the Palmer House Hilton either, so.
Or we could maybe just meet you for a cocktail, Michael.
We could do that too. There's a wonderful taco place right down the street here. And so we'll have to do it. So that's a plan for next year, okay?
Okay, I agree. But first, let's be taping first, then the cocktail.
Got it. Yes. That would be a much more interesting show if we did it the other way around. But you're the guest.
True.
So, listen. So sometimes when you're playing Trivial Pursuit, questions about kind of obscure laws are occasionally on there. And I have not heard of the phrase or the name, rather, the Comstock Act in a long time, since I was in law school, I think, because that's an oldie but a goodie because it's from 1873. Can you talk a little bit about the Comstock Act, why it was enacted, and why it's become a name that's in the news now?
Sure. I mean, the Comstock Act was, again, passed in 1873, and it basically makes it illegal to send certain kinds of pornographic and sex-related materials through the mail, and in some cases through various private delivery services. So there was, after the Civil War, there was concern that, you know, people were engaging in, you know, acts of vice. They were viewing pornographic materials. It was bad for the family, bad for them, and there were reasons to try to, you know, put limits on this. So one way to try to stop the spread of pornography was to make it more difficult to send it through the mail or through delivery services. So Comstock Act took effect in 1873. Now, it also pertains to abortion. There are provisions that don't allow for abortion paraphernalia to go through the mail or for abortion pills to go through the mail. Now, essentially, all those laws kind of limiting the ability to send abortion pills through the mail were rendered moot by Roe v. Wade. You know, when there's a kind of federal right for abortion, the Comstock, or at least parts of the Comstock Act that pertain to abortion, you know, are really, you know, no longer in effect. However, as we well know, June of 2022, we have the Dobbs decision, and, you know, guess what? Roe was overturned. So we have some people in the pro-life movement trying to use the Comstock Act to as a way to, again, limit or the ability to send chemical abortion drugs through the mail or even enact bar protections of preborn children.
Okay, and so let's talk a little bit about that lawsuit. So the lawsuit was filed in Eunice, New Mexico. Again, talk about another obscure. We got an obscure law in sort of an obscure place. Can you mention a little bit about the about why this lawsuit originated in Eunice, New Mexico, and what it's about, Michael?
Well, sure. A couple of things. I have a good friend named Mark Lee Dixon, and he does a project called Sanctuary Cities for the Unborn. and he tries to get local cities to pass ordinances against abortion. And he's had a lot of luck. He's had probably about 70 or 80 towns, cities have all passed ordinances against abortion. And I think that's great. We need to be creative here. You know, we do a lot at the federal level. We do a lot at the state level. There are things you can do at the local level, too. Now, one area where he's been active is New Mexico. Interestingly, New Mexico has been kind of a big battleground post-Dobbs.
Yeah,
the reason why is a lot of abortion facilities from Texas and other states have moved to New Mexico because
it's
less conservative and the laws there are more permissive.
Yes.
That said, there are parts of New Mexico that are very pro-life, very conservative. And you have at least three towns and two counties that passed ordinances to protect preborn children.
Okay.
This didn't sit well with the state legislature. They passed a bill saying that, you know, these local towns, you know, they cannot really pass state ordinances that limit or restrict abortion. So they claim there's a state law in place. Now, what our friends from Sanctuary City for the Unborn are pointing out is actually there's a federal law that trumps your state law, the Comstock Act. And because of the Comstock Act, states, if they want to, can regulate, limit, ban abortion, protect preborn children. So they're really basically using the Comstock Act as a way to kind of uphold these local ordinances protecting preborn children.
Okay. And so, well, what do you think is going to happen? I know you wrote a National Review article about this, Michael. How do you think this is going to play out?
Boy, that's a really good question. You know, it's certainly an unconventional approach. Obviously the Comstock Act was passed, you know, over 100 years ago. And, you know, it's really, we don't really have a lot of litigation, current litigation, that involves the Comstock Act.
Okay.
You know, there are several things it could do. I mean, basically, you know, ideally, it could really create even like a national protection for preborn children. Abortion facilities have to get their equipment somehow, some way. They have to be shipped. If it could really put a damper on that, that would really put a lot of sand in the gears of the abortion industry and maybe even really protect preborn children nationwide. It's very optimistic, but it's an outcome. It could also be used to really stop the shipment of abortion pills. You know, I think that's a very straightforward interpretation of it. It could at least kind of slow down the or hurt the ability of pro-abortion groups to ship these chemical abortion drugs through the mail. The one thing I will say is that I am glad that pro-lifers are being creative. You know, I think that, you know, we've had some luck with creative approaches recently. The Texas Heartbeat Law, which took effect even before Dobbs, that took effect September of 2021. They had a very unique enforcement mechanism. It actually gave like private citizens the right to enforce that law. And basically that made it very hard for that law to be challenged in the courts. So because of that unique enforcement mechanism, the heartbeat law in Texas took effect in September 2021. You know, that was 7-8 months before Dobbs. So that's just a good example of how an unconventional approach did protect preborn children. And we have data from Texas that show that abortions went down and about 7 months later, births went up, showing that a lot of children would have been aborted otherwise were born because of that good pro-life law that was put in place. So I'm not going to predict the future when it comes to these laws, but I am glad that people are just doing things that are creative and working at the local level. You know, again, we need to fight this at all levels of government in as many ways we can. We should leave no stone unturned in our efforts to protect the preborn.
Now, Michael, this is Loretta. Can I ask you a question about this, about Roe v. Wade? Roe v. Wade, it overturned the Comstock law based on the provisions within Roe v. Wade. No one went and struck down Comstock. So it basically comes back into play and is alive to assist pro-lifers in hopefully making sure abortion clinics don't receive equipment and they don't and the people who want to seek a chemical abortion don't receive a pill. Is my understanding correct?
That's what we're trying to do.
Okay.
At least that's what the pro-life litigators are trying to do. I mean, you know, again, the Comstock Act has been around for a long time. I'm not an expert about, you know, how well it's been enforced for kind of, you know, other things it tends to do. But again, we do have this federal law on the books, you know, that was in fact, you know, passed and signed a law that could be a very useful tool for pro-lifers.
And nobody ever struck it down specifically. Like
no, the Comstock Act was never, it was just not enforced. It basically the, you know, the Supreme Court's decision just rendered the parts of the Comstock Act pertaining to abortion just kind of unenforceable.
Okay.
But it was never struck down.
All right. Now, another side note, Margaret Sanger was indicted in 1914 for violation of the Comstock Act. Whatever happened to her?
Well, you know, Margaret Sanger has a very sad history. I mean,
she started,
you know, the American Birth Control League, which turned into Planned Parenthood.
Right.
And, you know, interestingly, Sanger herself was never a really big supporter of legal abortion, but she was a very, very big supporter of contraception and was one to, as you see, violate various laws to kind of circulate contraceptives among people. She was also, frankly, a racist.
Yeah.
You know,
started,
you know, the Negro Project.
Yes,
you know, she really had an interest in trying to limit the fertility of racial minorities.
Yes.
She believed in eugenics. You know,
yes.
Like many people of her era. So, I mean, she's Planned Parenthood's founder. Just, I think, has left a horrible history of just, you know, misdeeds and misconduct.
Yes.
You know, really encouraging a more promiscuous, more coarse society. Again, I think that, you know, she just leaves a horrible, horrible legacy behind.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to see. Even the New York Times reported that the Planned Parenthood location in Manhattan, which was called the Sanger Institute or something, they named it one of their leading Manhattan abortion clinics after her. They removed the name and said that they could no longer continue to associate with the name specifically because of the eugenics that she so closely identified with, which, of course, they denied for years and years that she was a eugenicist and said she was being taken out of context, et cetera, et cetera. But I do think that the preponderance of the evidence has made it very clear, Michael, that she was indeed a racist and a eugenicist. And if the Negro Project doesn't tell you everything you need to know about her work, then I don't know what will.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think that, again, look at things she said, she has quotes like, you know, more children for the fit, less for the unfit.
Yes,
you know,
I
think she was very clearly,
the
really scary thing is who decides who's fit and who isn't.
Right,
I think that should give everybody quite a long pause.
Right,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at her statements through the course of her life, and again, she was, you know, a very angry woman, and again, had views on racial minorities that were just, you know, repugnant, and her legacy is Planned Parenthood, which sadly carries on that legacy to this day. I mean, I don't think it's a secret that Planned Parenthood has set up shop in communities where there's high percentages of both racial and ethnic minorities. So, sadly, her legacy lives on to this day.
Yeah, and it's really shameful. And, one part of that Negro Project that I find so incredibly offensive is when she talks about, in order to kind of get it implemented, the best way to get to these people, I believe she uses that exact phrase, is to go through their ministers, because they trust their ministers. And if you approach their ministers first, that's the way to reach Black women and to get Black women, you know, to contracept and to, you know, dramatically limit their family sizes. So really insidious stuff. But, we're going to, before we let you go, because we need to go to our second break, what is your, if you're reading the tea leaves, first of all, I want I know you're not a lawyer, but you certainly follow this very closely. What was your take on the Supreme Court not upholding the 26 regs for the abortion pill that the Fifth Circuit had laid out as sort of a compromise? Were you surprised by that? And what do you think is going to happen as this thing, as we get closer to May, I think it's May 15th or May 17th, when the Fifth Circuit is going to hear this again? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I'll just take a step back. What they did is they ended the injunction. So they didn't really rule on the merits of the case necessarily, but
exactly.
They just ended the injunction. Right. So now those, you know, the chemical abortion policy, the policies regarding chemical abortion pills are now a lot more permissive.
Right.
It goes back to the Fifth Circuit where, you know, I think we have a good chance to win. You know, I think the Fifth Circuit's always been a conservative circuit. You know, I think that, you know, ADF made some very strong legal arguments about both the health risks of these chemical abortion pills, the fact they haven't been tested properly, the fact they were kind of improperly approved in the first place. So I think we have a very good chance to win on the merits at the Fifth Circuit. This will probably go to the Supreme Court. You know, that's a, you know, trickier thing to predict. Again, we do have five judges that did vote to strike down Roe v. Wade. We have six that did agree to uphold the Mississippi's 15-week abortion ban. I think we have a good chance of a good outcome. We have to pray, but it's hard to make predictions at this point.
Right, exactly. Yep. So, well, Michael New, again, friend of the show, I'm so glad that you could make time for us again this Monday, and I know we'll be talking to you again soon because there's The summer is not going to slow down on these issues.
No, it's not.
I'm
absolutely not.
Yep.
But we know you won't. You won't slow down, Michael. You are always coming up with a new analysis on breaking news statewide. And really, we're so grateful that you come on the program to alert us of what is coming to a circuit court near us.
That's right. And you know, and your analysis is because they're. What I love about it, Michael, is that they're just, you're always so factual. And I did quite a few media interviews last week, and I just felt as long as I could come up with facts and statistics and share them in a way people could understand, that seemed to win the day, even when I knew I was up against, you know, people who were abortion supporters who were interviewing me. So, again, I have to tell you, one particular interview I did, I think I had one of your NRO articles open in front of me because it came up very quickly. And I thought, who will have the most succinct analysis of this? And, of course, it was our friend Professor Michael New. So, well, you have a beautiful week then, and we hope that you'll be back with us soon, Professor New. And in the meantime, listeners, please don't go away after the break. We are going to work through all of what happened with these different and competing abortion rulings last week. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Freilich sitting in for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change.
Sometimes it's tough to hear Winds of Change over the air. What with tall buildings, power lines, and other static. Now you can hear Winds of Change anywhere, anytime, or on any device. When Winds of Change is on the air Monday through Friday, noon to 1, go to ststandschurch.org. Scroll down to the Winds of Change tile and click on the Listen Live button. Or visit Winds of Change Facebook page to see the Listen Live link.
We are the students of St. Stan's Acosta Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststandschicago.org. to find out how.
And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Freilich. We're sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change, and our special friend of the show is so special, he decided to stay over past the break, even though we had not expected that of him. So thank you, Professor New, for staying with us over the break.
No, happy to do so. Okay. Always fun to be on the air with you all.
Oh, well, it's great. We always love having you. And so let's go back and look at what happened with these different cases with the pills. Let's start with the district court rulings. We had Judge Matthew Kaczmarek, who is a Trump appointee, who ruled in a particular way for the Alliance of Hippocratic Medicine and some emergency room doctors in their individual capacities as emergency room doctors. And then Thomas Rice, right, in the Washington Federal Court District. And so two very different rulings. Michael, are you familiar enough with both of them to sort of break them down for the listeners?
I mean, I'm familiar enough. I mean, Kaczmarek basically gave a very strong ruling that chemical abortion drugs should have never been really properly approved in the first place. And
right,
one thing I would recommend everybody do is go online and just Google Alliance Defending Freedom and look at the legal briefs that they submitted,
right,
because they're very well written. I think very easy for a non-lawyer or a layman to understand. They make a very strong point that, again, these drugs should have never been approved in the first place. They were approved back in 2000. They were fast-tracked.
Right.
The kind of fast-track that was used, it's only typically used for drugs that can treat, like, you know, life-threatening conditions. All right, pregnancy in 99% of the time is not a life-threatening condition.
Right.
So it was very clear that this was politicized, put on a fast track that should have never gone on, and, you know, was approved when it probably shouldn't have been. You know, then, you know, there's a lot of policy changes that have taken place that have kind of increased the risks with these chemical abortion drugs.
Right.
At one point, you had to have multiple visits to a physician. Then it went down to one visit. Then during the pandemic, you could obtain these chemical abortion drugs online without an in-person medical exam.
Right.
Even after the pandemic, the Biden administration, FDA, extended that. So even to this day, we get these dangerous drugs without an in-person medical exam.
Right.
First, you know, the health impact of this has never been properly tested. And secondly, just common sense says this is dangerous. If a woman is in ectopic pregnancy and takes a chemical abortion drug, that can be fatal. If she's further along in gestation than she realizes and has a chemical abortion drug, that could pose a very serious health risk. So there was that. They also, the FDA, I guess around 2016, basically said that you could take these chemical abortion drugs longer in pregnancy. At one point, it had to be within 7 weeks gestation. They changed that limit to 10 weeks gestation. Again, there's research saying that later, you know, in gestation, these drugs are consumed.
Right.
That increases health risks.
Right.
That was never really properly studied. So, you know, the FDA has really not done proper duty in terms of, you know, testing and the safety of these drugs and testing kind of how policy changes might impact the safety of these drugs. So Judge Kaczmarek was basically, I think, ruled correctly, you know, that they should have never been approved in the first place.
Now,
you know, you also had a Washington state judge that had a different ruling, you know, basically, you know, upholding the FDA's decision to go ahead and, you know, approve these drugs. So basically that means that this case is going to probably be in the Supreme Court. When you have competing lower court rulings that contradict each other, that's usually when the Supreme Court intervenes and has to make some decision that kind of binds all the courts.
Now, Michael, you just discussed and listed some serious effects that could occur to women having ectopic pregnancies and also using it for a pregnancy later than the pill is actually prescribed for. What if I'm just, you know, our listeners out there and they're just saying, you know, well, you know, I don't have those problems. What are some of the common side effects that can occur to common ones, not something so serious as someone with, say, an ectopic pregnancy or someone who is misusing the pill as it was prescribed?
I mean, there could be just, you know, a lot of side effects that, you know, could involve, you know, cramping, that can involve, you know, nausea, you know, that can involve significant blood loss. You know, sometimes the point where a woman does have to be hospitalized. I mean, we just do know that, you know, there are some real serious health risks. You know, we also know from research that the health risks of these chemical abortion drugs are higher than the health risks involved in surgical abortion.
Right.
You have comprehensive surveys that have been done using the health registry from Finland, a comprehensive survey that was done using, you know, California Medicaid data. Both found that chemical abortion drugs have a complication rate that's four times higher than surgical abortions.
Wait. So let's hear that statistic again.
Sure. The chemical abortion drugs have a complication rate that's four times higher than surgical abortions.
And this is for a woman who now is home alone in her house or is with family that may or may not know she's just taken this chemical abortion drug, and she's having these kinds of complications, and she is basically alone if her family does not know she's done this. And short of going to an emergency room, she can have serious complications in her home in addition to the loss of her child.
Right, absolutely. And the one thing we also know that we're starting to see research on is that, you know, there's a very good chance that the psychological impact
right.
of these chemical abortion drugs is even worse than surgical abortions.
All right.
For the chemical abortion, sadly, the woman will often see the remains of her deceased child.
Yes.
And I'm sure that's very traumatic. Whereas the surgical abortion, that's typically not the case.
Right.
So again, the fact that, you know, women are, you know, there by themselves, the fact that they're expelling the remains of their child, the fact they can see these remains, I'm sure that's psychologically very difficult for women.
Well, you know,
we're seeing that, you know, from every research system we know from our friends in the pregnancy help movement, the post-abortion healing movement, you know, that, you know, these drugs do not only are fatal to unborn children, it can hurt women's physical health, it can hurt their mental health as well.
Right. And you know, that's a very good point, Michael. I have had the privilege of being on the board of directors for a pregnancy help center in Chicago for the last 25 years. And I also, when Vicki Thorne, the founder of Project Rachel, was alive, was on her board of directors, which is the National Office for Post-Abortion Reconciliation and Healing. And that really became a growing concern among Project Rachel counselors, priests, if, you know, the woman was Catholic, who were counseling post-abortive women. And even the women that were coming to our pregnancy centers was that psychological impact of seeing the gestational, the amniotic sac with the baby in it. And, you know, again, to your point of extending the use of the abortion pill from 7 to 10 weeks. And again, if there's no visit, in-person visit, there's no ultrasound. And if there's no ultrasound, there's no real way to determine the gestational age of the baby. You could be talking about 12, 13 weekers. You know, all a woman has to say is, this is when my last period was, and she can get the pills. And so you really could be face to face with a significant, sized unborn child at that point, where you can see arms and you can see legs. And there was one client that we had in particular who had an abortion. I think it was she was 9 or 10 weeks. So that's what she thought. We weren't even really sure. So it could have been even later. But she passed her baby's remains on the toilet, and she said, God. I looked down in the toilet, and I saw, she could see arms and legs and a little head, and then she said, then I flushed the toilet. She said, I flushed my own child down the toilet. And you can barely hear her talking about that without crying. And she speaks out about it all the time, saying, the physical part was hard because she bled for more than 10 days, I think. And that's fairly common, that you have what appears to be like a very heavy menstrual period, but it goes on for like 10 days. For some women, as long as a month.
Oh, my goodness.
And then you have that psychological impact of coming face-to-face with your child's remains.
Well, we have so many studies that have been done on the traumatic effects of war on our soldiers as they come and see all kinds of atrocities. And when you are face-to-face with the body of the child that you have just killed, we got tons of walking wounded women all over this nation that we don't even know how much they're suffering.
Right. Yeah, it's really dramatic. Well, the decision out of the Washington State from Judge Rice, specifically dealt with was the request from 17 attorneys general, including here in Illinois, from Democratic states who wanted assurances that abortion pills could be completely available and completely unregulated, even, given what else might go on federally. So, Michael, as I see that, I don't think that, and obviously given the Supreme Court's not extending extending the stay of the Fifth Circuit, it's kind of moot because in those states they have unlimited chemical abortion anyway. But one does wonder, I know in Great Britain they had a program called Pills by Post where you could get the abortion pills through the mail, and they actually discontinued it because they were seeing not only adverse effects in emergency rooms, with women coming into emergency rooms, but also 15% of the women where they took one survey of 1,000 women said that they were coerced in some way into taking the pills.
Yeah, I think that hasn't gotten much attention, and I don't have the data. But there is very solid data from Great Britain that emergency room visits, increased significantly after they started circulating these abortion pills through the mail.
Right.
And again, they very quietly ended the program. And just having these pills in wide circulation, is dangerous.
Right.
I could see a situation where a boyfriend, a partner that doesn't want his girlfriend to be pregnant, slips the abortion pill in a drink.
Right.
I think just having these things circulate, unregulated, could lead to a lot of problems.
Yeah, and they actually mentioned a case like that, Michael, of someone being slipped a pill that she had no intention of taking. And it's that first pill, listeners, just if you're unaware of the mechanism, this is a two-part regimen. The first pill blocks progesterone, which then starves the child and essentially leads to the child's death. So it's the second pill. So there's mifepristone, that's the first one. Misoprostol is the one that contracts the uterus and expels the baby. So so once you take that first pill, if you don't know that you've taken it, within a few days, the baby is going to be dead, for most likely.
Wow.
Yeah. And then obviously, you could either naturally start to miscarry the baby, but most likely you're going to need a way to remove it. And that was, I thought, one of the very poignant things that was raised by some of the emergency room physicians. Michael, did you read about that in a couple of the briefs where they talked about how they were morally opposed to abortion, they were ethically, as doctors, opposed to abortion, yet they were forced to complete and perform abortions when women presented in the emergency room?
Now, I didn't necessarily read those, anecdotes, but I think that that's very poignant, very, very powerful.
Yeah. It was because, this is not why we got into, doing emergency medicine, was not to perform abortions. In many of the cases, as I mentioned, without the misoprostol, the baby is already dead from the first drug, from the mifepristone. But still, it puts them. In fact, I heard one horror story from an ER doctor in a state that has some limits on abortion now, where a woman came in and she had come from a state where she had had an abortion, and she guessed that her baby was about 22 weeks. The OB on call, who had to come in to assist with this incomplete abortion, said, no, the baby was probably about 25 weeks.
Wow.
But the hospital staff had to hire counselors for the anesthesiologist and the nurses and the trauma surgeon and then the OB. Like, everybody on that team who saved that woman had to have trauma counselors called in to help them. That's how difficult it was to process it. And these are the kind of stories I think we're going to start seeing in greater number, I'm afraid.
No, I agree. I think that, again, that there's quite a lot of, things about chemical abortion drugs that, need further research. But I think we do know is that, there are negative psychological effects for the women. There could be negative psychological effects for others involved in this decision,
right,
including the medical staff. Again, that does not surprise me at all.
Right. It's just, what I find particularly galling is that, and now I've got to do some research to make sure I'm accurate on this, but my understanding that is in some of the states where they have allowed non-doctors now to perform abortions, that they're also simultaneously, their state legislatures are looking to make it much more difficult for women to sue for medical malpractice, these doctors that harm them. They're looking to protect themselves. They're eliminating safety regulations and inspections. They are allowing non-doctors to perform abortions and then simultaneously trying to provide additional tort insurance, I guess.
Protection
for these.
As always,
yep.
Follow the money.
Yep.
Who's making the money on,
yep,
these drugs?
Oh,
who are
the
manufacturers that are, yeah, are producing the two different meds that make up RU486?
Yeah, no.
Do we know who the manufacturers of these drugs are?
I mean, I could look that up. I don't have it at my fingertips, but,
It's real. That's particular. Like, if you are injured by a physician who is acting recklessly, and, for example, your uterus is perforated during what is supposed to be, your safe legal abortion, and you hemorrhage to the extent that you have to have a hysterectomy, I'm sorry, that's why medical malpractice insurance exists, so that there is a way to compensate you for your time and your suffering. So it's not just your time, but the time spent in the hospital is what I meant by that. And then also, you are sometimes a woman in her late 20s, early 30s, you've had a complete hysterectomy now because of your perforated uterus, and now you're infertile. And now when you want children, you won't be able to have them. And these are some of the, I just can't believe, I debated somebody from the ACLU last week on our local NPR station, and she was saying this is just a very safe drug, and it is just cruel to take it away from women. And then that was echoed. So that must be a talking point that's out there, because then Governor Pritzker said the same thing. He has very clear presidential aspirations, how cruel it was that Republicans are trying to take away this unfettered, unlimited access to abortion pills through the mail.
My handy dandy little computer in my hand, otherwise known as my phone, indicates that the company that owns Misoprostol is none other than
Pfizer
Medical Group.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Go ahead, Michael. I'm sorry.
Also, Danko Laboratories.
Yes.
Does make mifepristone, and there's a maker called Gen BioPro that makes a generic version. So there's not many, many people making these. Danko does so very secretively. They really don't tell people where they're located. They're obviously embarrassed by this whole thing.
Right.
So, but yeah, there are manufacturers out there that I think, could be subject to lawsuits.
Yes.
Oh, and they should be.
Absolutely.
We had a case here in Chicago where we had a beautiful young black woman who was And for, I think she was 17 or 18 weeks, she already had a little 2.5-year-old, and she had decided to abort this baby. But they perforated her uterus and waited 7 hours to call 911. And by then, she had bled out, and she died. And unfortunately, the settlement was only $2 million. And I think that might have been more aggressively handled. But still, it's really it's distressing to see that I think most women don't realize that they can be compensated, at least in some states. But I am really worried that this is going to be the next blow against women, is making sure they can't sue for damages if they're harmed.
Right.
Because of someone's negligent and reckless behavior.
Well, if it's going to happen, watch the Illinois General Assembly.
Yep. Oh, yep.
They'll be on the cutting edge as Pritzker signs it into law.
Yep. I mean, they have it now. They're going after and Michael, maybe this is something that you might be able to help look into, very aggressively going after pregnancy resource centers and giving the attorney general basically just a blank check, and giving private citizens a blank check to shut down pregnancy resource centers. It's really appalling. And I hope that, you know, but in you know, we could fight back. But in a state where parents just kind of rolled over and let the governor repeal the parental notification bill without so much as a whimper, I'm very concerned, you know, that we might not be able to address it. So, well, we're going to go to our final break, Michael, and I hope you can stay with us till the end of the show.
Sure, happy to.
Okay, terrific. We're going to our final break. Listeners, don't go away.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
You are listening to
Neri Fiorito
and
Loretta Freilich
on Winds of Change. Here is an update on the Fulton Sheen petition.
We Catholics stand just inches from the goal line to have the saint we desperately need now, Venerable Fulton Sheen, publicly declared blessed. Yet new obstacles keep arising to delay this from happening. The Diocese of Peoria is now requiring the unanimous support of the U.S. bishops behind the beatification of Fulton Sheen before a new date is set for the ceremonial Mass. This has never been necessary in the Church's history. The Fulton Sheen Movement's petition drive to set a new date soon for Sheen's beatification Mass now has 10,000 Catholics from around the world clamoring for this. We need this voice magnified by hundreds of thousands more Catholics. And you can help us do that. Take action. Go to FultonSheenMovement.com and sign the petition and share it everywhere, because everyone agrees we need Blessed Fulton Sheen now more than ever.
Bye now, and God love you.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Freilich, and we are joined by our favorite guest. I'll call him that now. Special friend of the show, Professor Michael New. Professor New, I know that a lot of our listeners follow you at National Review Online. In the last couple of minutes that we have, can you tell us some things, some issues that are coming up that might be coming down the pike that our listeners should be looking for? Anything particular you're working on with National Review?
Well, since this is an Illinois show, I want to give a quick shout out to something happening on Wednesday that may be of interest to your listeners.
Oh,
there's actually going to be a rally to protect pregnancy resource centers.
Oh, fantastic.
As you mentioned, there was Senate Bill 1909 that would give the Attorney General very broad powers to shut down these life-affirming centers. So on Wednesday, April 26th, 2 days from now, at noon, there's going to be a rally at the Illinois State Capitol. So
okay.
I would encourage...
That's in Springfield, Illinois. Yeah.
That's in Springfield. So I encourage all your listeners, get to the Illinois State Capitol at noon on Wednesday, 2 days from now. A lot of good speakers. Mary Kate Zander, of Illinois Right to Life, my good friend Eric Scheidler of Pro-Life Action League, my good friend Teresa Bukovnik of Progressive Anti-Abortion Uprising. Her team's a big help to me in front of the D.C. Planned Parenthood.
Yes,
a trip to Illinois just to help you folks out. Brian Westbrook from Coalition for Life and Julie Garofalo from the Waterleaf Women's Center. So,
fantastic.
Again, if you're listeners are near Springfield or can make the road trip, it'd be well worth your while. Having a lot of people showing up at a rally, you know, always helps, you know, to really kind of encourage our friends, supporters to do the right thing on this. I mean, you know, we should be encouraging pregnancy help centers and, you know, supporting them. I really hate to see when elected officials are trying to harass, disrupt them. So, again, this is a great rally, and I encourage all of your listeners to attend.
Yeah, you know, it really is infuriating because, as you know, Loretta mentioned, follow the money, Professor New. And when you think of, there's at least five new abortion clinics here in the state of Illinois since right before COVID and since our parental notification law was repealed. And now, you know, they can't even be happy with that they're right. They're making money hand over fist. It is publicly funded in many cases.
But that you claim to be for women and you're right. Protecting women's rights to get this alleged reproductive health care.
Right.
But when you see all the good that the pregnancy resource centers do, I mean, teaching them how to be financially accountable right. In balancing a checkbook.
Helping them to learn how to breastfeed. Helping them to
learn how to cook and clean.
That's when, you know, sometimes, you know, and this isn't true of every one of the clients that we've had, but
right. Some
of the ones who've lived with us for a couple of years, you know, they weren't raised in a way where they, like, their mom made a weekly meal
right. Plan.
And, you know, they don't know how to cook many things from scratch.
Right.
And
so if you're
those
for
basic
women,
skills, right.
This is something you want to get on the ball with.
Right.
Because you're teaching them how to love the next generation.
Right. And how to love themselves.
Yes.
And have respect
absolutely.
For themselves. I mean, you know, in a number of the pregnancy centers where I'm affiliated, you know, moms live with us free of charge, as do their babies. But, you know, there's accountability and responsibility that goes with that. So
amen.
They have to either be in school or they have to have a job. You know, they have to be taking parenting classes. And, you know, for a lot of them, it's the first time anyone's taken that kind of personal interest in them and their well-being. But, Michael, thank you. I wasn't, you know, we're up in Chicago and Springfield's about a 5-hour drive from us. So, you know, it is one of the great criticisms of Chicago in particular is that we often don't know what's going on in the rest of the state. And there's quite a bit of truth to that. So I'm grateful to know that there's something going on in Springfield. And I think it's really important for members of the Illinois General Assembly to know that, like, we are watching,
right.
You know, and mm-hmm. I even if we can't stop this bill, so let's go in our final minute here, Michael, can we talk through, I think the Becerra case from the Supreme Court would essentially, I don't understand how this is going to be constitutional after the Becerra decision that the Supreme Court gave from that case out of California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we got a good decision there. You know, they did really uphold, you know, the rights of pregnancy help centers. So I think that if this bill does pass, I think we can litigate effectively. But let's try to stop this bill from passing in the first place.
Right. I think you're right. And I think really educate people and, frankly, shame those who are trying to
oh, God, Mary, I love
choice.
You, but
no.
They have no shame.
Well, that's probably true. But, you know, we can do our best. I mean, they ignored the pleas of sex trafficking victims and undid our parental notice law. And we just, I mean, these are really, they are not pro-choice. They are pro-abortion. They are taking
pro-death.
Away choices from
right. Women.
They are taking away the right of parents to know about irreversible surgeries being done on their daughters.
Amen.
I mean, it's, you know, Michael, this is, it's hard to believe that we're here, but here we are. But anyway, thank you. You're so generous to give
and
us a full
hour. And we thank
you.
We thank you so much, Michael, for giving us the heads up on the rally on April 26th at 2 p.m. at the Illinois State Capitol.
Actually, it's at noon.
At noon. Sorry.
Noon.
12 noon. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
At noon to oppose Senate Bill 1909. And there'll be some pro-life heroes there. Unfortunately, Michael New is only available on the radio. But God bless you, Michael. Thank you.
Michael, keep up the good work, and we'll talk to you again soon. Have a great week, everyone.
It makes no sense to research deeper truths or sit on the fence. Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? Such meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred, the time is now, the winds have changed. Read the signs, no time to hide the to say when right from wrong has become so obscure, it does not take that.